Hello.
What's up?
What's up?
It was good. It was not good, but it was fun.
No, it was. I mean, everything's good relative to other certain maybe events that could more or less be going on in Congress right now. But it's not that kind of a podcast. How are you?
I'm all right, mm-hmm. Other than warm.
Okay. Well, I mean, can you provide some unique context that I could use here?
Some unique context. Let's see. Very busy day. I'm definitely not working on two full-time projects at the same time because that would be irresponsible. And I definitely didn't just stuff a giant Euro down my gullet 5 seconds ago. But you know, it's just regular day, regular day. Yeah, if you ever go on vacation, and then like think like, you know, it's okay. I got like one or two small things to do on this project when I get back. That's fine. I'll totally remember exactly what they are and be able to jump right back into it when I sit back down and just knock that out in 5 minutes. And then you sit back down and you're like, what do I do for a living again? Where do I store files? What's a computer?
Yeah. Yeah, I have experienced that, which is why I try to limit vacations through very little intervention on my own part. But yeah,
I thought you were going to say you'd like to try and just time your vacations with the actual shipping of things.
No, because that's impossible. When I first started in this industry in 2005, I was like, oh no, I don't have any vacation days because you don't get any when you first get a job. So I was like, I guess I can't go home for Christmas. And I managed to like work it out over the weekend so that I would take one unpaid day. It was just like so sad. It was so sad. And then the next year I was like, oh no, everybody's working so hard and I have no idea when I can take vacation. What if I take vacation and it turns out it's when it's delivering something? And so then I didn't really take any time off except for Christmas again that year. And then over the years, I've realized that, you know what? You can just put down any time on a calendar you want to. And odds are something's going to be due. And if it is, oh well, life will go on without you.
Well, I get a lot of those questions. They're like, how about in 2 months? Can we go somewhere? I'm like, sure. I don't know. I mean, you could ask me 2 days before and I won't know either. Because this thing could like just, you know, something could crash or something could get extended by a day. And then suddenly it throws a wrench into everything. I don't know.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, though, is I'm at a company and you're freelance, so it's a little different.
People can pick up a little bit of slack if you disappear. Yeah, if I disappear, customers email me going, "Hey, where's the thing? We have a thing launching and I need the video for the thing." And I go, "Sorry, bro. Planes ain't taking off because it's too hot in Phoenix."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty wild, actually, the 120 something degree limit on airplanes. I didn't even know. It wouldn't have occurred to me.
it wouldn't have occurred to me either because I was very young when what year was it? It was like in the 90s where we broke the record and we hit 123 or something. So I remember that day being miserable. I remember driving around my mom's Honda feeling like I was melting. But Amanda's dad works in an industry tangentially related to aerospace things that I shouldn't probably discuss publicly. But he's like, yeah, they only test airplanes up to 120 degrees because above 120 degrees, the air is too thin to really get takeoff on a runway. So there's no guarantee that it'll actually get off the ground in time. It's like, oh, that's totally a good, reasonable reason to delay flight. It's not like, oh, it's too hot and you'll be sweaty in the plane. It's like, no, there's not enough lift generated by those wings to like not crash into a building. So
yeah, they're definitely running into a situation where there is no wind beneath your wings. So that's pretty sad.
Can there really be wind beneath your wings? Because the wings kind of generate the wind that lifts them up anyway.
No, wings do not generate wind. What are you talking about? Most of the time they're
gliding.
They
generate lift. Actually, technically, there's no wind required to fly.
Yeah, but the gliding part. Like,
I think we should.
Do you notice when the birds stop flapping and they just kind of go along in the air?
Sure. We have. Well, most of our birds don't fly. They just sort of hop around on the ground.
Well, you've quails. You have an infestation of quails.
I know, it's great. They dig little like divots in the dirt in the back that are like cool in the shade. They just rest there.
Yeah, you have a bunch of quail divots in your backyard.
Mm-hmm. And bunny divots. They share sometimes too.
Oh, how can you tell the quail divots from the bunny divots? Is it just like a size thing?
Mostly, yeah. The bunny divots are bigger because the bunny's bigger. Although sometimes the quails will sit in the bunny divot when he's not around, and they'll put like two or three quails in the bunny divot.
Oh, well, it's a good use of space.
Sure. I'm glad they get along well enough to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, sharing is caring.
Sure. Quails care about bunnies.
Yeah. Who doesn't care about bunnies? Other than Elmer Fudd.
People who cook them?
Probably Mitch McConnell. But anyway...
he perpetually looks like that guy from the first X-Men movie who turned into the blob of water and like dissolved, like halfway between the human and dissolved form.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor guy. So.
No. He does not get any sympathy. Sympathy, empathy, I forget. It's.
I was having a conversation earlier today in another place where... I had said I might have used the word hate in relation to somebody, and they said, oh no, you know, I just can hate the decisions they make, but I can't hate the person. And I was like, the F you can't. sorry everyone, it's a very politically charged discussion, but you know, healthcare impacts freelancers and employed people alike, and mm-hmm. and Dan and I represent both of those things.
Yeah, there was I saw a tweet going around. It's like, don't forget, these are just regular people who love to play with their dogs and go out to eat with their families and stuff. And it shows like, I don't know, somebody playing with a dog. I don't know who it was in the photo. And it's just like, yeah. And then after that, he does horrible things with legislation. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it is some sort of demon in the body of a human being or something. That would be preposterous. I'm just saying I don't like him, but let's not dwell on this because I don't think that our political commentary is something that people tune in for. But I had some strong feels today, mm-hmm. and so you know what else happened when you went on vacation?
What else happened when I went on vacation?
You went to a place that I had recommended to you, and then it turned out to be very bad.
This actually just came up 20 minutes ago. It was not bad. It was just kind of a mess. So we went to, what's it called? Ironside?
Yes, is Ironside fish and oyster. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a very busy place. We actually forgot to make a reservation before we headed over there, and we had to like wander around for an hour or so, which was fine. It was what? Wasn't it like a, was that Monday night or something? I was very surprised how busy it was for a weekday. But yeah, they put our names in the little iPad and they're like, well, it'll be, you know, 45 minutes. And then they texted me in like a half hour. I'm like, oh, that's fine. It was an interesting event. The restaurant is very cool. I like it. It's very dark. It's got some nicely nautical themed stuff, being a seafood restaurant. I don't know. Do you remember the layout of it specifically? There are two bar areas where you can sit at. Well, I guess there's the bar. So there's the bar area. Then in the back, there's like a kitchen where you can see him cooking. And there's a bar that you can sit at right next to the cooks and eat there. And there's another one on the other side over by an espresso maker where you can sit and eat there. All right. Do you recall that?
Yes, I recall that. But we were over at the banquettes, which were with the piranha skull wall.
Okay, that's a very cool place.
Yes.
And there were a couple open tables over there by the time we sat down. But, you know, our waitress insisted that it was very busy, and she apologized for it being so busy that some of our things were delayed. And I just looked around, I'm like, well, some of these tables are empty. There was a man, I don't know where he was from, I don't know, maybe he was French or something, who had an emotional support Yorkshire Terrier in his hands while he was eating. It was very small. It was like the size of a football, maybe at biggest, but it was just staring at us while we were awkwardly waiting for our seats, because the lady took us around to the right through the bar all the way to the kitchen bar thingy, bar top in the back to sit down, and there were three seats, but they were not together. So she kindly asked five people. I don't think they were all together. I think it was a party of three and a party of two. If they would squoosh down all the way to the end up against the wall so the three seats could be available. And these people were noticeably irritated because they were in the middle of their meals. To the point that they turned around to see, like, us standing there, like, waiting to sit down. And I was just like, I can't deal with this. I'm going to look the other direction. So I kind of turned my back. And it's a good thing I turned my back because over at the other bar, there were just three seats in a row right in the end that were totally open. I'm like, we could just go over there. But, of course, the young girl who was trying to get these people to move down couldn't hear me because it was very loud in there. And she was kind of far away and I wasn't going to walk over there. She came back and said, they're going to scoot down. And I said, there's three right there. And she just immediately booked it over there and said, okay, we'll have you guys sit here. But then she didn't go back to tell the other people. So they squished down together. And then they must have just been like super irritated because we never came back to sit down next to them. So that was step one. And those bar stools are like, they're attractive and they're like made out of like little metal barrels. They are super uncomfortable to sit in. The backs of them go up maybe 3 inches and they're made out of solid metal. Like there's no padding on the back. So that was a little weird. So that was the start. And then let's see, we ordered some drinks and they didn't come out for like 20 minutes. They came out after we ate the appetizer, which is, you know, whatever. And then they were very small drinks. I don't know if you experienced this, but did you get one that was in like a I don't know, like a cocktail glass with a stem or like an old fashioned type glass? Or did you drink wine when you were there?
The first one I got was in a like a pint glass kind of tumbler thing with crushed ice, and the second one I got was in a just like a what would you call it? The normal whiskey sized glass, whatever that is.
It's called a rocks glass or an old fashioned glass or something like that.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, it wasn't full. It was like an inch and a half from the top. I'm like, well, that's interesting for a $12 cocktail. Sure.
Dan, that's not that abnormal in these parts.
No, I know. It's just they're slightly miniaturized glasses. Like even the cocktail glasses are like slightly smaller versions of the regular glasses. And then it was just like it was like it was a tiny portion to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's see. And then we ordered some food. The crab cakes were very good, but they also had crab claws on the menu and their little raw menu there. And I was like, oh, that'll be good. But they don't really like, you know, are you a fan of like stone crab claws or anything? Have you ever gone anywhere to get those?
I have had them. I don't like them because I don't like the shell.
Yeah, there's, the shell is, it's both incredibly hard and incredibly brittle at the same time.
Yes.
So once you smash it, you get lots of tiny pieces that go everywhere.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like three times as thick as like a king crab leg or something. So you normally have to like, you know, what they do is before they bring it out to you, they hit it with a mallet to like shatter it, but it's still sort of stuck there. And then you just sort of peel it off. I guess they were in a hurry because like the little tiny divot of crack on there was basically nothing. So I'm like prying at it with a fork and like shooting shell everywhere and getting shell in it. I think I maybe had like a third of a fork's worth of meat from the crab claw. And then that was it. And there was no flavor in it either. So it was just like, well, okay, that was money poorly spent. I won't suggest that ever again. But the crab cake was very good. So that kind of made up for it intermittently. This is just like the world's longest, dumbest complaint about a restaurant.
I mean, that's fine. I hear complaining about food is very popular on podcasts.
Is it very popular? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm gonna breeze through the rest of this. We're dumb tourists, whatever. Heard the lobster roll was good. Three of us ordered lobster rolls. And then, you know, I asked the lady, like, can we get something other than French fries? Because I think we had, like, French fries earlier that day or the day before or something for the sides. And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. You can sub in a, you know, one of their little vegetable sides because they've got, like, four or five. I don't know. They're one of those stupid places where it's like, you can get some, you know, charred, grilled, like, blackened broccolini with some cheese on it as your side. I'm like, it's fine, whatever. Just give us each a different vegetable or something. And then she went away to take somebody else's order that took, I swear to God, it took 15 minutes to take this person's order. I don't know what the hell was going on over there. And I guess she was just so frazzled by the time she got back that when we officially ordered, that she completely forgot that conversation about subbing the fries. So we all got lobster rolls and fries and then three full-size sides of vegetables that were burnt and flavorless, and we didn't actually really enjoy eating them, so they were mostly untouched. But then coming back around, you know, in this up and down roller coaster, the lobster roll was one of the best things I've ever eaten, and it was just so good. The sourdough or whatever that roll is there was just like caked in butter, and it was. I'm thinking about it right now, and I wish I was there to eat another one. And that was very good. And then we left awkwardly.
Yeah. See, when I went, it was during lunch, and they have these skylights, so it's actually kind of bright in there. And there's way more seating. So we had no wait or problem or anything sitting down, and we placed our order. And the weird parts were was that the cocktails didn't come out super fast, but I thought, oh, well, it's just a fluke, whatever.
Did they say the same thing to you? Like, sorry, it's just really slammed right now, and you turn around and like half the restaurant's empty. You're like, really?
Yeah. So I had just taken her for her word when she had told me that. I didn't realize that would be something that would actually occur to you. I thought that was just odd. But the other thing that jumped out was we ordered the oysters Rockefeller, which I didn't particularly care for, but Jason likes them. So for some reason, he had it in his mind that we would order six instead of the three because there were two different portion sizes. And they were enormous, like fist-sized oysters. So they were a thing. I was a little unhappy about having those. But then we split the fish and chips, which were good. And it came with a little coleslaw thingy, which is fine. And then we had the octopus that Jason wanted to order. I don't like octopus or squid or calamari or just anything, really. Cuttlefish, you name it. Any sort of mollusk thing that is in the water. Although I haven't had a nautilus, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't like it. Same for conch or something. But it was just not usually the kind of thing that I order, but it was Spanish style where they like braise it and grill it and stuff, and then it comes out with like this chorizo sauce and whatever, so it was spicy. And so I had some of the part that attaches to the body, and that was fine, but then when you got down to the parts where the little tiny tentacle suckers started to get all crispy, then I was just like, I can't do it. I'm out. And Jason enjoyed the rest of that. I mean, it had good flavor, it just was... there's just something about it that just always skeeves me. The one thing you didn't mention in your critique, which I also forgot to mention to you before I went there, knowing how important it is to you.
Yes.
Was the bathroom.
The bathrooms. Oh yeah. My God, these are dreadful.
Yeah, I was a little surprised the first time when I went in there. She was like, oh yeah, they're over there, and you know, pick anyone you want to. And I'm like, anyone you want to? Like, what is the thing
well,
here?
Like, There's six of them, and two of them, no, three of them are labeled men and women. Like, there's two men and there's one woman, and then there's a couple other that just don't have labels on them. So it's like, okay, you went out of your way to label these ones. Why not those ones? It doesn't matter, really, I guess. But the ones that are labeled, I believe, are better equipped. But yeah, so they do this thing where you have your individual room. With a toilet, but the sink is like, there's a hole cut in the wall between two of them, or I guess between all of them, and the water comes straight down through the wall into this hole, and they just put a little bit of a trough there, and they put a sticker on the mirror that says, place hands under the mirror. And when they mean like under, like your hands are basically in the other person's bathroom. You're like 4 inches underneath this hole in the wall before it starts to spray water on you. And then they have air dryers next to the door for your hands, but the air dryers are at like eye level. So when you put your hands up to it, it blows water like right in your face. It's the most perplexing bathroom I've ever been in. It's horrible.
Oh, the one I was in, the hand dryer was also underneath the mirror on the other side.
Oh no.
So it was just, and I find I don't really enjoy that because it's like a operation where you're trying not to touch anything.
Yeah,
with,
absolutely.
It's like, I just wash my hands. I don't want to rub up on every surface in this bathroom. And then it's like, oh crap, how do I open this door knob? Not to be all, you know, Howard Hughes aviator about it, but I prefer I prefer a barrier between me and a doorknob because there are people in this world. I don't know if you know this, Dan. There are people in this world who don't believe that you always need to wash your hands, that it's more of an optional kind of a thing to do. And I don't agree with those people. George Carlin famously was one of those. Part of his stand-up bit was that because he didn't touch his butt, he didn't need to wash his hands. And George Carlin was very wrong about that. Always wash your hands.
Yeah, I mean, and then you throw in the difficulty of this being... It's like a motion-activated sink that you have to jam your hands into this hole in the wall to actually activate. Like, it took me 4 tries to even get it to turn on. So if I was a more impatient person, I would have just, like, said screw it and left. But I'm not. Although it was such an unsatisfactory cleaning experience that I used some hand sanitizer when I got back to the table anyway. But, yeah, those bathrooms are bad. Real bad.
I had completely 100% forgotten about those bathrooms. until you had said that, and then I was just like, oh my god, and then I had a flashback to it, and I was just like, oh, I really should have mentioned that. Jason was sitting next to me last night, but the other night when you told me about this, and I had mentioned it to him, and he goes, oh, Dan has that whole blog about bathrooms, doesn't he? And I said, yeah, he does.
Which I haven't updated in 4 years or whatever it is.
Dan Stern bathroom blogger.
Participate. I think I did take a picture of some bathroom in San Diego, but it wasn't that one. I was just too flustered.
Ah, you're the potty pundit. That's what you are. The potty pundit.
No.
Yes.
That's not going to stick.
Well, we can make it stick, audience.
But like the last thing I'll say about this, but like if you're sharing this trough between restrooms, how many times a day do people stick their hands in there and there's already a pair of hands coming in from the other direction?
See,
and you're basically holding hands with a stranger.
I think we were in different setups because the one that I was in, it just was like a recess underneath, but it wasn't actually connected to the other side of anything.
See, that's what I thought, but then when I was in there, I looked down real low and you can see all the way through the other side. Did you go in if you come in from the bar side there, because you can get in there from the other side where the employees are only supposed to go, where did you go, to the right or the left?
The right.
Okay, the first one on the right is the one I went to, and that hole in the wall went all the way through.
Oh, okay. Well, that's also the one I went to, but I thought you said the hand dryer for you was up at eye level.
Yeah, it was. It was like an external, just like the standard hand dryer. So maybe the one in the mirror was broken.
Oh.
So they put like a third party one there.
Well, anyway, this was a very long way of saying maybe I should never recommend Ironside Fish and Oyster to anybody.
No, it's good if like, you know, you got to go somewhere at least once to like try it out or whatever. And some of the things were really good. It's interesting to hear that their portions are kind of all over the map because, you know, like the crab claws that came with 3, it's like, that's fine. That works out well for us. The crab cake, unspecified, or I don't know if it said crab cakes or crab cake, but it was a singular crab cake on a plate. And it's like, oh, that would have been good to know. We would have ordered more than one then.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the sides are absurdly large. Presumably they're smaller if you get them as a sub for your actual side on your sandwich instead of like a standalone side.
Well, and the fish and chips, Jason and I split one order, and basically each split order was what I would consider to be a decent portion size entree. So I don't know how that happened. And they even trimmed the fish in half and battered and fried each half, rather than just giving us one big split fried piece or something. So that was actually kind of a nice service thing that they did that. But and I don't remember if they charged a split fee, but I don't think they did. But the reason I had also recommended it, because it was run by the same restaurant bros who run the False Idol Tiki Bar, which I had gone to.
Oh, there was a drink on the menu that said False Idol or something, and I was like, hey, that's that place, but maybe that's just a coincidence.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a coincidence. They own a few different restaurants in the San Diego area, and if you go to their website, it's super bro-y, like the bro-iest bro website. And they have that False Idol Tiki Bar, which does the whole FACO reservation thing, but it's a secret, and you have to get to it through walking through a special refrigerated door that's supposed to look like a freezer, but there's some part of this themed aspect that made me ridicule it because I thought that was just vaguely ridiculous. Like, either you have a tiki bar or you don't have a tiki bar. You don't have a secret tiki bar. It doesn't make any sense. But
maybe we should have a secret podcast.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, every podcast is a secret podcast.
I guess, but the bootleg feed is a secret podcast. You got to know the incantation to get in.
Yeah, which is why we never talk about it or post about it on Twitter ever. Every week. But anyway, they just got shut down by the fire department right before you went. Because the refrigerator door thing was a fire hazard. Turns out you can't just have people stumble through a fake freezer.
Was it because there was like a big lip you had to step over to get in?
Yeah. And it was an uneven surface on the inside. It was like weird steps and stuff. So they got to retool the whole thing.
Condensation from the refrigeration.
I'm really not surprised that it was unsafe. And Jason disagreed with me, and he's like, "Oh, no, it was really cool." And I was like, "No, it was not cool." Like, I'll be so happy when they rip that thing out.
I have another question for you, because you don't follow me on Foursquare Swarm thing or whatever, because I don't think you use that, which you probably should, because it's a good way to find what your friends are doing.
I don't care.
Nobody requests me, because I'm not going to let you see where I go, because I don't do that. But maybe I would for Joe.
I won't.
Did you see that place right down the row from Ironside called iDessert?
No.
This is a new paradigm in dessert that it was the only thing open, and we were in a hurry to get out of Ironside lest something else befall us, that I had never heard of. So it's like a build your own thing. It's called iDessert. Like, it was an Apple product, and you build your own dessert. You remember when they showed off iMessage games where you would like build an ice cream cone with a friend, like in the little app, and send it to them?
No.
You don't remember that demo. Anyway, okay, so you go over to this iPad, and basically you take all of these different components and you select from the 6 to 12 different flavors they have. But basically they have all these pre-made like meringue cones that go on the top. It's just like a top. If you imagine like an ice cream ball that had like a shell of chocolate around it, except it's made out of meringue, and there's like 20 different flavors. So you pick your meringue, and then you pick the gelato flavor that it goes over. And then you pick the flavor of cake that goes underneath that. This is very thin little circular cake. And then you pick what flavor of like cream sauce lines the inside of the meringue on top of the gelato. And then you pick what kind of syrup goes on top of the meringue, which they apply through this little, like, it looks like a giant eyedropper, but it's like a food safe eyedropper that they stick through it. So you can pull it out and like squeeze it, the sauce all over the gelato. And then you can put like crunchy sprinkles on top of it. And you just do this sort of like, it's like a mix and match fun, like iPad game that you can play to build a dessert that costs $12.
Nah.
It's insane. And so many people in there were like, "Oh my God, this is so novel and weird." And look at this. You get a special spoon that the backside is basically like a flathead screwdriver that you have to like crack through this meringue before you can even get to the freaking gelato because it's super hard. And it's just like, I don't find like gamification of dessert to be that interesting. But it was like iDessert by some dude's name, so I guess it was like, I don't know, it strikes me as like the kind of thing like a fashion guy would do in his free time because he was bored. It was really weird. Don't get me wrong, it was delicious, because you know, it's just a bunch of weird sugary flavors and stuff stuck together, but it was so strange.
Okay,
you should try it out next time you go to Little Italy.
I won't.
No, you won't.
I mean, I did go to the, when I went to the Italian restaurant you told me to go to.
By the way, you got me pronouncing it wrong. There's no second E in it. It's just Benkoto.
Oh, okay, whatever.
I kept calling it Benkoto. Then I look at the sign. I'm like, oh, that's weird. Joe's way sounds better, but that's weird.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It just means like well cooked, right?
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
Because Koto is right. Cooked and Ben it would be good or well. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We went back there again. It was good.
Okay. I thought it was fine.
Way up high in the top little like claustrophobic section.
Oh, no, we were down by where the restroom door thing is. There's like a bar thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The layout was a little strange. And
those are the better seats now that I've sat in both places.
Oh, okay.
Because upstairs, it's kind of you can't see outside, so you don't have a view, and it's low ceiling and concrete, and there's no cell phone signal, and you just feel kind of claustrophobic.
Sorry.
Yeah, pasta was good, though.
Yeah. Oh, because what Jason wanted to do was go to the ramen place next door, Underbelly. Did you see that one?
I thought the place next door started with an M.
It, like, well, sort of next door on the side street thing that connected. Anyway, there's a ramen bar there. It's it was also owned by the same Restaurant Bros that owned Ironside and False Idol. But I talked him into not going to the ramen place after the tiki bar because I just had those tiki cocktails and I'd rather have Italian food than have a steaming hot bowl of soup. But that's just me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we've addressed all of our San Diego topics.
Have we? Oh, I got so many San Diego topics.
Wait. Did you not dance the merengue on the sun porch deck thing?
I did not dance the merengue on the sun deck, or whatever it's called there. I think it's called the sun deck. But I did spend a lot of time there, because we were in Coronado, very near to that hotel, not staying at that hotel. But that place is a freaking madhouse during the daytime.
I noticed that as well.
I feel a little like sad about it. And we talked about this. Me and Amanda talked about it a fair amount because she's been there before. She grew up in San Diego. So she knows what it was like a while ago. But yeah, they've really just sort of like they got a bunch more smaller tables and they've got their food setup going out there. And we each got, did you eat out there?
No. We just went to Move Time, the ice cream place. And then we wandered through all the shops.
The correct thing to do, because we sat out there and we got a beer and ate their little signature surf and turf three taco thing, and it's three overly large C-minus tacos for $26. It was just like it feels like they're trying to like Disneylandify that particular part of the hotel, because like that's what people want to do. They want to go sit on the deck and have a drink and enjoy. Look at us, we're at the Hotel Del Coronado. It's like this feels kind of gross, and they've got like all these weird like IKEA couches and fire pits and these weird umbrella things going on over there, and it's like that's totally not what the vibe of that place used to be, and it's kind of a bummer that that's what it is now. But we went back late at night, I don't know, like 1-2 in the morning, and walked around and there was like nobody there, and that was a much more pleasant experience because the place is way better when it's not crammed full of idiots shouting at their child for forgetting the sunblock or whatever the hell was going on there. But it was a madhouse. Also, because there was Gary Sinise, his little cover band or whatever, it was playing a Father's Day concert or something on the beach, which was an attraction for some people. Yeah. Anyway, I love that hotel.
Did you say my name's Dan too?
No. So it was on the beach.
Lieutenant Dan? Anyway.
It was on the beach, but there was an area that was like gated off for people who were paying ticket members. I think the tickets were like $70. And inside there was a cash bar and a dance floor on the beach and like some slightly nicer chairs than you could rent from the hotel. And then in the hotel, there was a VIP entrance for the concert, which was basically just like a conference room at the hotel that had like hors d'oeuvres. And then you could like walk down to your chair and it's like, or I could just stand on the other side of this little fence here and hear it just as well, because we're out on the beach and he's playing a concert 100 yards away, so there's literally no reason for any of this. It was just like, I don't know, it's turned into this gross, weird kind of touristy place.
Yeah, the tourists are really ruining the vibe for the other tourists.
Yes, exactly. I tried to pinpoint how long I had been going to this particular place, because like it's not like it's that personal to me, because it's more of my family like dragged me there a bunch of times when I was young. But it's like it's been at least, I don't know, 20-ish years that I've been going to that place to see the changes. And of course, me being, as we've discussed in the past, me being what that used to be guy, I'm like, I remember before this was suites or whatever. This used to be a game room under the pool over here before they crammed in some more rooms, and that used to be real grass, and they had a really nice wooden gazebo over here that they took out. And yeah, so there was a lot
of that. Wait, those weird cottages underneath the sun deck used to be like not cottages?
Right underneath the sun deck? Yeah, no, yeah. There used to be, you know how hotels had like, for kids, they had like a game room or whatever. Pinball and crap. There was one of those, but then that was sort of open to the pool. There were like full showers, not just the little feet showers. Like if you were swimming in the ocean or the pool, you could just go shower off right there. And I think they also had like a little bar right there for the pool people. But yeah, none of those rooms were there 15 years ago. And then those giant, like, I don't know, beach houses that are on the other side of the little grass there.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Those are recent additions as well in the past 10 or so years, because of course they cost like $5,000 a night and everyone wants to rent those because, you know, you got your fire pit and you're like right on the sand there. So those don't like super block the view, but like, you know, it's getting like super dense and like, I don't know, just congested there. And then I don't know if it was, I mean, I of course it was when you went there, all of the grass is fake grass now, which mm-hmm. is weird. That used to be like cordoned off, like there were little stanchions all the way around it because it was always like super nice lush grass that they would have private events and weddings like right there, and now they've just opened it up to the public, which is I guess nice that people can hang out there, but at the same time it's like, oh, you had to make it fake grass in order to make it sustainable for people to hang out here, which is depressing. So there's that.
Okay, sorry.
Anyways, and then I snuck into the big crown room, the big ballroom up at the front of the hotel. That's the one place I had never actually been in the hotel before, because I guess I didn't realize there was a back entrance that stays unlocked, but it's got these awesome chandeliers that are shaped like crowns. You can see it through the windows in the front that were designed by the guy who wrote Wizard of Oz in 1911, apparently. We did a lot of fun research. When we were there walking around at like 2 in the morning, the hotel night desk guy has said he'd been working there for 35 years. So I started grilling him on the changes and stuff. And did you go through the lobby? Did you see all the giant, stupid LED like TV screens?
I don't care for those TVs. I don't think that was
it's idiotic. No, they're like, oh, they're trying to appeal to the younger kids. I'm like, that's not what younger people want to see. Like, that's new. And then where they have the big like Hertz rent-a-car nonsense, like 5 feet away, that used to be a piano bar, like that whole that area there, and then like the stupid giant gift shop that sells the tiny bottles of Maker's Mark for $40 and the tiny bottles of Macallan for the price of the full bottle. It's like that used to be a piano bar where you could hang out in the lobby and like sit by a fireplace and drink, and they turned it into this fucking monstrosity of a garbage fire trying to sell t-shirts that cost $40.
Dan.
Yes.
And you just take a deep breath. So I think you've lost everyone.
The thing about it is I have some family memories in some of the places that are there, and yes. They are tarnishing it with those sorts of things.
Okay, that's good. Now,
anyway, I ate a couple of greasy diners in Coronado too. They were really tasty.
Oh, that's nice. We only got stuck in traffic on the way in and on the way out. So we didn't partake of the things that were around it on that Main Street drag thing.
Yeah, Orange Avenue gets really busy on, you were there on a weekend, weren't you? Yeah, oh, you were Memorial Day weekend. Yeah, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. You should, yeah, there's back roads you can take, whatever, but it's not good to drive around there in the daytime.
It's unpleasant, especially for parking. But
go visit at midnight. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, I'll just go sneak back into the Crown Room and at midnight, whatever.
I mean, the bar is open till midnight. At least at the near the deck there. So, you know, you can go tour around and see stuff and walk down to the beach and whatever.
Okay. All right. So.
Actually, I take all of it back. Nobody go there ever. That's my place.
So, let's. I think we've addressed everything here. Speaking of childhood memories things along those lines, I think that's a pretty decent segue into some film news. And do you know what film news I'm going to bring up, Dan?
I feel like you're going for the Han Solo thing.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, it's been a rough time. It's you know, time. Let's just all pop in a bit of beer because it's Miller time.
Because it's
Lord and Miller. Lord and Miller. Lord, they, yeah. Yes. Anyway, so they were the directors on the Han Solo thing, and it's one of those Star Wars anthology movies like Rogue One, where it's not specifically a Star Wars, you know, crawl whatever letters flying at you movie. It's the other kind. This was going to be the second of these anthology movies to come out next year. And there was just a little tiny bit of a weird thing about it, which was that Lord and Miller are goofballs and have done a lot of really goofy stuff. And it's good goofy stuff, don't get me wrong, but it's still goofy.
Good goofy stuff that you haven't seen.
No, I've seen a lot of it. Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs, 21 Jump Street.
You saw 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, I just didn't see the sequel. And you just always rag on me for not seeing the sequel. And I'm like, I'm just not going to pay money to rent it right now. I'll wait till it's on Netflix someday.
I feel like it's probably on HBO.
Okay, this is not the point of the story. So they're just kind of goofy directors. And they have a certain goofiness to all of the things that they have done. Where I wasn't quite sure how that tone was going to sit inside of Star Wars, but initially when they had pitched these anthology things, they're like, oh, it's an opportunity for us to go and do things in Star Wars universe that are different from the main movies and to branch out into other things. And that was why Gareth Edwards originally, Josh Trank was going to do that. And then Gareth Edwards stepped in and it was going to be like a bold, dark thing. And then it turned out to not be, because there was apparently a cut of things that people who have a lot of authority and power weighed in on and said, this isn't Star Wars-y enough. And so then they went in and they made it more Star Wars-ier. And Gareth Edwards supposedly rolled with these decisions and played along and did all of the good professional things that he should do to stay in the good graces of these people. And then flash forward a year, and you have kind of a similar situation with Lord and Miller, where supposedly, according to the Hollywood rags, the tabloids, if you will, there was some conflict behind the scenes between them and Kasdan. The elder Lawrence Kasdan and his son were writing the thing, and apparently he was none too happy that they have a somewhat improvisational style with their approach to things, and really thought that things should be followed through more in the way that he had them written. And this had caused some butting of heads. And they'd been filming since February, and they had paused production, scheduled pause, not like an emergency pause. And then they had reviewed some of the material. And they still have several weeks to go in filming things. And during this pause, and during this review of material, there was a decision that was made to fire the directors. There were creative differences. I have to imagine they were offered the opportunity to revise what they were doing in the way that management would have liked it, and that they had turned that down. That's my assumption, based merely on the stories we've heard from Gareth Edwards and some of the other speculation that has come out. Mm-hmm. But
they talked a lot about their process is one of the reasons why.
Yeah, and it turns out that that was not going to happen. And so they're off of it. And then flash forward 24 hours, and a new director has been announced, and it's Ron Howard, which is somewhat surprising, but not really, in that Ron Howard is not like Phil Lord or Chris Miller. he's really not a goofball, I wouldn't say. And he doesn't he does a ton of improvisation on his pictures and plays fast and loose with things. He is definitely somebody who is very technically adept. And
well, he talks a lot about collaboration and letting actors go with instinct and stuff. But yeah, I think he is much more of a classic film director.
Yeah, he is more in the line of Spielberg and Lucas than he is in the line of Lord and Miller, I would say. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that assessment.
Yes. And so I feel like that's why that happened. And I know a lot of people were throwing around the name Joe Johnston just because he had worked on Star Wars for a lot of it, and he also directs things. And they were like, oh, he would be perfect. And you know, I think that him or Ron Howard would be a comparable decision. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Ron Howard's a pretty safe bet. There are a few bets safer than Ron Howard.
Right. And I'm sure that if Joe Johnston came in, he would probably want to have some sort of creative input more than I would say Ron Howard is going to have.
Well, what did I see going around? Ron Howard basically has 2 weeks to come up with all the script changes he wants to implement when they get back into shooting.
Yeah. It's just...
slightly daunting.
Very. It's daunting, and also he's not really going to have his stamp on it. He's basically there to execute this in a very workmanlike way on behalf of the powers that be at Disney and Lucasfilm.
I forget how crediting works on something like this, because they're not he's not officially in for reshoots. He is the new director, because they fired the current director, but do they have to like share credit because of a portion of it was shot by them?
I have no idea how it's going to go, because I believe they can also turn down being credited.
They can turn it down, but yeah. Like or they can petition for it. The weird thing about the union is you don't really get to like pick and choose how you get credited or if you get credited.
Yeah.
But you can petition for it.
Yeah, and you can also say that work that was done was not something that you were in on, so you don't want your name attached to it, and they might decide that a name needs to be there, and so they'll use substitute names sometimes and stuff. And so a lot of times you see like Alan Smithy on productions, two E's, that Alan Smithy is used as someone to assign blame to, because for example, Dune. David Lynch directed it. The producers were never fully happy with things. They recut and rehashed and did whatever they wanted for the TV version and home video and stuff. And David Lynch didn't want his name attached to whatever their decisions were. He didn't even see them. So he just had his credit changed to Alan Smithy. So if you watch those versions of the film, you'll see Alan Smithy where David Lynch's name would be. And so it is.
Move Ups in the chat room mentions that Alan Smithy on a Star Wars movie would be hilarious.
That would be pretty darn funny. It's not like they show the director name at the start of the film. Because of George Lucas's decision to put all the credits at the end of the film, which got him kicked out of the Directors Guild or whatever. Remember that whole thing?
Not specifically. I thought you had to pay a fine for that or something.
Well. He apparently, he was like the pioneer of this bowl stuff. And so they
you can curse. I cursed earlier.
Yeah, well, you just said the H word, Dan. It's fine.
I think I said some other things, too.
Oh, well, maybe.
We're not going to.
No. What's in the show stays in the show. So the thing is, though, that I still think that what we potentially will see will be fine. In a lot of ways, things that are maneuvered turn out fine.
Rogue One turned out fine?
Yeah. I mean, there are parts of Rogue One that I don't like and I have criticisms with, and I will wonder if they are criticisms I'm having because it's a result of a reshoot thing, or if they're criticisms I would have had originally. And I will remain wondering those things for many, many years to come, because nobody wants to talk about it. And that's just how that's going to be. And I imagine no one's really going to want to talk about this either, because it would be bad for their careers and stuff if they were blabbing about it. So I don't think you're going to see a tell-all from Miller and Lord about like what was in their version or something. I don't think that's happening. But and I think Ron Howard is too much of a professional to do that in any of his interviews, but I don't know how they're going to handle the press junkets. Be interesting. Maybe they just won't have Ron Howard walk around and talk about the movie.
I can see that, particularly because he was brought in towards the end. He strikes me as one of those guys that if he's willing to sit down and talk about something, it's going to be one of the projects that he invested a lot of time and emotion and energy into. So if this is one where he's kind of doing somebody else's job for them or a patch job, he's never going to be as fully invested as he would be with something else that he was creative on from the very beginning. So I think he'll probably stay out of it.
Yeah, and I don't think he wants to weigh in on decisions that other people have made or things that he couldn't change because of decisions from production or something. I think he's just going to be very diplomatic about that.
He's Ron Howard. He could just be like, I don't have to answer to any of you people.
This is very true. I've seen some criticism of Ron Howard. Like, when was the last time you saw a good Ron Howard movie? And I would say that mainly the problem with Ron Howard's recent affair is the writing is not fantastic. I would say that he's definitely somebody who can execute well on things. I don't think that is a skill that he has lost in any stretch of the imagination. So I'm not worried about this, especially since he's working off of Kasdan's original material. And if you think that Kasdan's a genius, then you have to think that whatever you're going to see on screen is going to be great, because that's supposedly what you're going to be seeing now after all this adjustment. There you go. I can't imagine that this is comfortable for the people who are also working on it, because there are people who will have been involved in pre-production things for post that, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I assume things will just go forwards and that those won't change much. But we'll
they ain't moving the delivery
we'll
date or the release date, so get on that, fellas.
Yeah, have fun. Have fun,
hurry
everybody.
It up, Todd. Is Todd working on this one?
I'm not sure. He might be. He may or may not be. I know that Rob Bredow is the VFX supervisor on this, and he's a Sony ImageWorks alumni. He left ImageWorks when they forced all of the technical stuff up to Vancouver. I believe he had a very good piece out on them about that, and moved on over to ILM. And so you've probably seen him in videos for the ILM X Labs stuff. He usually shows up there. Him or John Gaeta.
There are already a lot of ILM people on the IMDb page for the untitled Han Solo prequel film, so I'm assuming Todd's going to get involved in this at some point.
Oh, yeah. I just don't want to speak on behalf of Todd. This is a podcast of historical record.
I think we know Todd well enough that we could speak for him in all things.
I mean,
his preferences, what movies are good, what movies are bad, who deserves to be kicked out of the film industry. We could speak for Todd.
I don't think Todd would appreciate that. I think I'm gonna rein you in here and say no. on the ante.
In case you can't tell sarcasm through podcast, we don't speak for anyone other than our own stupid selves.
Yes, and I really don't even speak for myself either. All of this stuff I would deny in court. You can't prove it's recorded. The thing is that I'm still looking forward to whatever this is, although I am very interested in what's going to be happening with Colin Trevorrow, because as we have previously discussed after seeing Jurassic World, that was an S show of a thing, and I can't imagine that he has adapted his personal flavor of things to the Lucasfilm style. So I'm kind of waiting for him to get booted off or replaced midway through. Or
you'll have to refresh my memory on his directing style and why it was so contentious.
Well, he was just like, yeah, you're gonna run in high heels now, and that's great. And then, oh yeah, we're gonna shoot this really long shot of this thing flying through this other thing. That's wonderful. I don't think he's a good director. There, I said it. Even though I said it before in the Jurassic World thing. Just re-listen to that.
From my recollection, I think we critiqued a lot of his decisions. I don't think he's on Josh Trank level of
No. I wasn't saying that.
In terms of being able to like just work with the production to make something that they want, and I feel like
he might get Gareth Edwards rather than Lord Millard.
That's probably a good way to describe it. That's a very inside baseball way to describe it, but that's about what I would say too.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get handled by the production.
Manhandled.
When do they start shooting that?
I don't know. Soon-ish, I imagine. They shot all this stuff for episode 8, so why not shoot episode 9?
When do we get episode 8? Is that this year or next year?
That's this year. This December.
Yeah. That's weird that the Han Solo film is what? It's like a March release, right?
May. Mm-hmm.
Wow, we're not even going to have to wait full years for Star Wars products now.
No.
So does that mean episode 9 is slated for December 2018?
No. That one's 2019.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then they can totally push Han Solo back to Christmas 2018.
Yeah, well that's what they did with Rogue One. It was going to be a May release too.
Hmm.
And Star Wars Episode 7 was going to be a May release, and Episode 8 was going to be a May release. It's fine. They can move things to December. It will not affect anything because it just gives them more time to do stuff, and that's better than not giving them time to do stuff. Also, I think that moving to December is probably a good thing, just in terms of spacing things out, because then you always own. Star Wars would own the month of December in perpetuity, rather than just being some thing that happens randomly every now and then. Because if it happens in May, then they'll go the full rest of that year and past that into the next Star Wars release. So you'll get a short window between 8 and that, and then you'll get a long window between that and 9. So it would make more sense to move it to December.
Just think of Todd is all I'm saying. Just move the release date to make it so he doesn't have to work super late hours.
Yeah. Be reasonable, guys.
I feel like I've been avoiding really looking at this Han Solo movie stuff. I am just now noticing that Han Solo is played by Hobie Doyle.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Okay.
That's weird.
Okay.
I mean, Donald Glover as Lando is going to be weird, but I think he could totally do that justice.
I had no burning desire to see this movie. Let's just say that prequels about previous Star Wars characters' histories have not lived up to expectations. So... it's fine if you just leave it a mystery and just keep moving forwards. But then, you know, people felt differently. And this is supposed to be sort of a Western style in the Star Wars universe. So that'll be a thing.
What the hell's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. Shoot 'em up.
See, look, director listed on IMDb is officially listed as Ron Howard, not Ron Howard and Gordon Miller.
Dan. Yes. IMDb is not
is the sole truth no, it isn't. In the industry. I know.
Yeah.
Is Emilia Clarke going to be no, never mind. That's a stupid question.
Yes, it is. So moving on. The other piece of news that was announced today after the Ron Howard thing was that Jurassic World 2, it's called The Fallen Kingdom. It's got a poster with embers and stuff, and it says Life Finds a Way. It's the tagline of the movie. You know why?
Because it's from the other movies.
No, because Malcolm's back. Dr.
Is he
Ian
actually
Malcolm.
Back? I saw some people saying that.
Yep. Well, do you know why they were saying it?
Because he's back.
Yes. The powers
look
of deduction.
He's on IMDb there too. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Fallen Kingdom. What a stupid name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you call it Star Wars. You could call it a Jurassic World 2. Still,
better, yeah, I guess
still
it's better
disappointed.
Jurassic World 2, even worldier.
Well, now we will have a way to say, you know, is this, what is the worst Jurassic Park sequel that has Jeff Goldblum in it? Because now there'll be more than one, and you'll be able to grade them.
He was only in 2, right?
Yeah, Lost World.
Yeah, Lost World and then this one. It can't be worse than Lost World.
Oh, Lost World is so bad. So
bad. Pretty bad.
Yeah, but...
Although, you know, if they're going to keep him as a kind of main character in this one are going to be pretty similar to... Maybe they're just going to do Lost World, but this one at this park.
Yeah. Oh, he's gonna go back with his RV, and he's going to be in a sequence that takes 10,000 years of that RV being tossed around by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And then they're going to go do stuff, and there'll be a baby T-Rex, and then they're going to go to San Diego and then rip up San Diego. Spoiler alert for Lost World. But yeah.
Wait, James Cromwell. He wasn't in the first one, was he?
No, he was not in any of them.
Maybe he's going to pop up as a hologram and give advice to somebody as a dead person.
That would be someone like him. Or he can play a doctor with a lot of insight and knowledge, but maybe someone who plays fast and loose with the rules and doesn't respect authority.
With a bad Irish accent, maybe?
Well, sure, but I was thinking of his role in Star Trek First Contact. But
of course you were.
Yes. As fast I want to do.
Yeah, maybe the Fallen Kingdom is space. The kingdom of space.
Yeah, the final kingdom.
The final kingdom. Yeah, it's not going to be too much longer before there's dinosaurs in space.
Yeah, the undiscovered kingdom.
The undiscovered.
That's what Shakespeare called the future. Hamlet. Anyway, so I'm going to stop with the
talking about Shakespeare. That's not in the news these days.
No.
How do you feel about Shakespeare?
I prefer it in the original Klingon. It is. Why do you even ask? You know what it is, Dan. Search your feelings. You know what to be true. Yeah, don't worry about it. I'm gonna make you watch Star Trek 6 someday.
Okay.
It'll happen.
Whatever.
It's exactly what you're going to say after you watch it.
We should watch some more Ron Howard movies. He's a good director.
Well, you know what I was thinking about today after this news announcement? Well, actually, last night when they were rumoring before this was announced, was that it'd be a pretty good time to watch Willow on Defocused.
I'd rather watch EdTV.
I'd rather watch Willow because it's a Lucasfilm production. With Ron Howard.
EdTV has Matthew McConaughey in it.
Willow.
And Woody Harrelson, who is in the Han Solo movie. Boom. Tied in right there.
Yeah, but Willow has Val Kilmer.
Oh, God. So we can watch The Saint then?
I will bargain with you and I will see The Saint if you watch Willow.
Have you seen The Saint?
No, I haven't seen The Saint. I did sign up for one of the incomparable things to try to be on an episode to discuss Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
Boy.
Yeah. And part of the reason I did that is because I do actually kind of like Batman Forever. And it's a bad movie, but I kind of like it because it's just ridiculous. But Val Kilmer's in that one.
Is that the one with Schwarzenegger?
No. That's Batman and Robin. I hate that one.
Which one's Forever then?
Forever is the one with Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones and Val Kilmer in it.
That is a very bad movie.
It is, but it's fun.
Is it really though?
It is. the sequel to that Batman and Robin is not fun. It is bad. It is very bad. It is horrendously bad. And apparently it was a total mess. And Joel Schumacher has apologized profusely for making it. Apparently there were some forces at work in the production of it that resulted in a less than adequate product.
And nipples on the suits.
You see, everybody gets so hung up about the stupid nipples. That's not the worst thing in the movie.
It's one of the more memorable things.
I think people just like to criticize it because it's just easy to say as a criticism and just be like, nipples, blah. And it's just like, okay.
They're in every scene. Yeah. They're in every scene.
They're not in every scene. Do you know what a scene is, Dan? I'm questioning your talent as a director.
It's very warm in here.
Okay, we can wrap this. Our capes have crusaded. Our lords have millered. We can skedaddle.
Is there no other relevant information you want to discuss for the week?
The heat wave continues till Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yes.
Continues permanently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to live in a place that's not Phoenix, but that's besides the point. It's yeah, it's a different set of rules here. Where
you got them oceans and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of mitigate the heat a little bit.
Unless you're in the valley. But, yeah.
Stay out of the valley.
Well, funny thing. My job is there. So, can't. But
You should quit your job.
Yes. Yes.
This is a podcast. I'm supposed to tell people to quit their job, right?
Yeah. Everyone go grit yourself right now a lot.
And by grit yourself, he means rub sandpaper on your body. Be equally as pleasant.
Just plunge yourself into a pool of homily grits.
What? Wait, are these cooked grits or uncooked grits?
Cooked grits. Just as
oh,
a
I
nice.
Would do that.
It'd be very therapeutic, I think.
It'd be very warm and gelatinous and buttery.
I mean, people use like oat baths and masks and stuff at spas. Why not grits? just go marinate in that for a while.
I think I took an oatmeal bath when I got chicken pox as a kid.
Oh, well, then oatmeal's good for your skin, they say, or something. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an otologist.
We should ask Micah.
Yes, well, I mean, he's more of an expert on mucus, but...
mucus and humidity.
Yes. Speaking Alrighty. Of... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Go a ahead. Dry heat. Bye.
Oh, you were rapping. That was a segue to an
yes,
exit?
Yes, that was a there was a segue right through those grits and the
oh,
humidity.
Oh, God. We're so just wonderful at this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm.
Done. I like grits. Yeah.
Okay. Checking. Just checking. 1, 2, 3. Done.